welcome.
You miss Cleo.
I I'm the ghost of Miss Cleo. I talk like, I don't know, what is this? What is hello and welcome to Art and Labor? I'm Miss Cleo.
Ultimate vocal fry, just top notch.
That top was shelf. Turned it up to 100%.
And then you right got this.
It's right at the
very
top.
Very sensual.
Someone did Miss Cleo on Drag Race really badly, on Canada Drag Race. Oh, and then I watched that before I went to bed last night, and then I had a dream that Jeff Bezos was on Drag Race and that his drag name was Show Bezos.
It's so beautiful. It just opens up so many possibilities. Like, I mean, God, what does his lopsided eyes look like with full face?
I gotta tell you, I saw it like perfectly visually clear with like total clarity, and like I still see it. I can still see the dream.
Oh, that's amazing. Now. So I have a question for you then. Does he make one of his eyes look bigger to make them look the same, or does he make one of them look smaller, like put a lot of eyeshadow and like put
it was more like a lot of lashes and shadow that kind of just hides it.
Nice.
Which is like kind of like the trendy way to do it right now anyway. And it was a lot of like magentas and like silver plated like form-fitting structures like on his head.
Oh,
and
wow.
On
his
shoulder.
He's still kind of, he's like techie but beautiful.
Yeah. I think he was bald. I don't think he wore a wig, but he was in full drag.
Oh, that's
like
bold.
Fine. But he had like a headpiece that was like a pink, a magenta-y like feathery thing and like silver.
Yeah, there's a lot to work with. Like, you don't often see someone like really just adorning their skull in the drag.
Well, it's very
world.
Very Sasha Velour. She was very big on that, and then I think I was probably thinking of Angina because she came back. She came back for All Stars, and so I think I was thinking of the bald queens when I pictured this Show Bezos moment.
Yeah.
Dumbest dream I've ever had.
No, I don't know. I think you're going somewhere good with this.
But it's because, Lucia, I watched the fucking antitrust hearing.
Hell yeah.
And you did too,
oh
apparently.
Oh my god, yeah. I couldn't not. It was too exciting.
Can I also say visually that it's like so funny that they each have their own little color?
Yes. I loved it. I mean,
sorry.
No, it's great. It's like, how else can you tell them apart?
There's four of them, and they're all different because they each have a different color.
Yeah, yeah. And otherwise, they're pretty much four heads of the same Hydra. But,
seriously?
You know, that's why we need to tag them.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. How about, okay, hot goss on the top. Jim Jordan.
Jim Jordan. Yeah, which
so
one? Is he the
Republican from Ohio, I think? I forget.
PDF Jeff Bezos?
Yeah. No, he so he was talking to Sundar Pichai.
Oh, right. Sundar Pichai, yeah.
And he was like, and he was the Republican dude who was like, had no mask on and every. I mean, they took their masks off to talk, which was weird, but like, he was like, oh, you know, when is Google going to stop silencing conservatives and siding with the World Health Organization, who's obviously lying to us and like simping for China? And then everyone was like, Jim, shut up. Shut up. And he was like, no, you can't silence me. I want to know the truth. And then he has his time. And afterwards, everyone is like, look, we don't like this isn't you're not even bringing any information about breaking up the trust. You're just like asking about some insane conspiracy theories, dude.
Oh, my God. It's really wild. So is he different than the other Republican who asked Google why his Gmail campaign emails get put into spam or whatever?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that was a different guy. Yeah,
no, this was the guy who, after he was talking, everyone just yelled, "Jim, put your mask on." Like, you anti-masker freak.
and then the Democrat lady went on and was like it's did a catty remark at one of them, and then one of them like yelled out of turn, and it was like a whole thing.
Oh yeah, wait, the lady, the blonde lady.
I do not want to memorize the fucking Congress people. I don't care. Like, none of them were that great anyway. None of them were like really holding any of these scumbag CEOs, head of whatever's, like, to task. Like there were some good questions, like, but like it's not like they gave us nothing. Like, and they just, well, like,
it's pretty complicated, I think, like what they're having to do, because it's like, so they have three laws that they can try to like use to break up these digital monopolies, right? So they have like the Sherman Act, the Federal Trade Commission Act, and the Clayton Act. And that's like, and all of these laws are really sort of vague, you know, like everyone probably knows the Sherman Act, right? It's like, you know, it's like you can't attempt to make a monopoly, or you can't like conspire to combine to make a monopoly, which is vague, you know what I mean? Right. And then it's like the Federal Trade Commission is like, you can't practice unfair methods of competition. And then the Clayton Act is like, sorry, I'm trying to remember all this stuff.
Yeah.
You can't have like mergers, or they call it interlocking directorates, that would create, you know, the monopoly or the unfair competition.
So that's why there was like a lot of questions about like why do you like for Apple, for example, like why do you use preferential treatment for your apps over other apps and call them like copycats rather than like competition?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just, so it's like the way that they are able to try all these people has to fit into the existing legislation, which is why they're like, I think, having trouble getting at what exactly the problem is when all of these tech dudes are like, I make a community for people to come together, so I don't really understand why I'm here, because I'm just doing something nice. And then they have to go like, yeah, but the way you're the only one who lets us come together is bad. You know, it's like, well, fuck, we don't know how to talk about this at all.
I think it just pissed me off because it's like we already know that Apple and Google like already do this. Like, what, like why do we have to ask them over and over again if they're doing it?
They have to collect evidence from what they're saying and add it to all of these documents and actually go through the legal system that we have.
Yeah, and it's so, but sucky. It's so tedious. The constant refrain was like, I'll get back to your office or whatever, instead of answering the question, which how is that allowed?
It's like the Ghislaine Maxwell thing where she's like, I don't recall. I wasn't there and I'm not guilty and I'll answer you later. I don't think so. Bye. Like, you're always allowed to do that.
Yeah. It's always just like, I don't know. I am the CEO and it's supposed to be my job to know, but I don't know.
Right. Yeah, same thing with all of those senators who were making money off of the stock, like,
yes,
just major,
like, trading during, yeah, like coronavirus early, mm-hmm, time. Yeah,
which is insiders. I think that's happening again, actually, with Kodak stock.
God, oh, that whole thing, I can't even wrap my head around.
Yeah,
that
Kodak stock just shot up to, like, I don't know, it was at like $2 or something. I think now it's at like 60 because they're going to start manufacturing all of these chemicals to take away the business from the Chinese.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's like, we do need companies to be producing as much of this shit as possible.
it's a little disconcerting because it's like, they're like, Kodak is in Rochester and upstate New York, it has all of the waterways,
oh my god,
that
totally,
like, feed into the city. So I think we're gonna see a lot more issues of like upstate, downstate fighting over like clean,
yeah,
resources, because all of the like EPA protections have been thrown out the window too. So they're going to be like mass producing chemical bullshit right,
absolutely,
above the city.
And it's like, knowing the United States, they're going to produce a bunch of the chemicals, but then not have like enough of something else, or like not have enough like lab workers, which we definitely don't have enough lab workers. And there's like no, there's no infusion of money going into like just like training more people to read the tests quicker. Like, the tests in New York are taking 7 days to get a response, which is basically useless.
Oh god, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, oh, don't worry, we're gonna manufacture these chemicals to treat COVID that we don't know how to treat. And we actually realized that the tests that people take, if you tested positive for corona, it also means you could just have the common cold. They don't know that. It turns out that is also an official admittance.
Great.
Yeah, nobody knows anything. It's fine. We just live in a world where it's easier to die.
God. Nightmare. And then we have all these nightmare fucking tech conglomerates to deal with everybody being at home a lot more and everything getting delivered through Amazon. Like, another question I wanted to mention was like the idea of like, what is essential?
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, friend of the show, Maddie Varner, wrote about for The Markup. And one of the Democrats pressed Bezos on like the idea that like his company was able to ship non-essential stuff during the pandemic just because of how big they are.
Yeah.
Where everybody, all of his competition, weren't able to. That seems pretty clear cut to me. Also, like, him prioritizing like the Amazon technologies over the competitor technologies during the pandemic, like the Amazon Ring got priority for security camera, was deemed essential or whatever, which is total bullshit.
Yes.
Fuck the Ring and fuck all of that shit. But, you know, the congressperson also brought up like the direct competitors to the Ring that were not deemed essential.
Yeah, I think it's pretty bizarre too, like, because you know, one of the questions was of the Senate was like, hey, so you guys are definitely trying to profit off of the pain and immiseration that is caused by this pandemic, and you know, trying to use this time as a means to like strengthen your business is pretty abject in our view. And they're like, we don't know what you mean. You know, we're just, you know, some of the only providers out there. And it's like, yeah, Jesus Christ, Amazon is responsible for 70% of online sales already. So it's like, they're at this place where they can't not send things to people. Like,
It's so wild too, like, how much like Amazon relies on the post office, and like how like all these companies rely on the post office, and like during all of this the post office is being like directly gutted and targeted. Like,
oh yeah, dude. I mean, it's like, well, that was kind of what we were talking about earlier on when the post office, or, you know, the postal service announced that they were, you know, just dipping back into bankruptcy. It was like, oh, Amazon is going to buy out this federal organization, yeah. and that's going to be illegal. Like,
no, we've been talking about that before COVID, even.
Yeah, God, we're big fans of the post office.
Yeah, it's insane. and it's so. What was the newest shit about that? Like, because Trump, of course, did his big tweet about, what if we postpone the election because we can't do mail-in? And of course, it made everyone go insane. But it's like, yeah, these are all like, you know, these are all possibilities that we're going to have to contend with, you know.
Like, I know. Yeah. I mean, we were taking bets, you know, a couple of years ago to see whether or not he was going to hold elections to peaceably, you know, pass on the throne. But he doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
So he's not good. It's just sort of like, well, technically, you can pull all kinds of congressional bullshit.
And Cuomo and the New York BOE gave him the perfect example to point at and be like, look at how fucking shit this was. Look at how illegitimate a lot of the primary in New York was.
Yes.
And it's true. And he's correct because Cuomo intentionally made rules that the post office and the BOE could not follow and could not I don't know, what is it, like, square the circle. Like, the BOE says people can get the ballots in before this date, and the post office is like, well, we're so backlogged that we need a week. And it's like, and then Cuomo won't relent on the date. Like, it won't give extra time, even though the post office needs this extra time. It's not the voters' fault. Like, it's fucked. Like, that's so fucked. Like, the voter did everything that the BOE instructed the voter to do. And because of something out of the voter's control, a lot of votes aren't going to get counted. It's fucked.
Yeah, it's that kind of fucked that we're all extremely accustomed to at this point. It's like, ever since time immemorial, we have cast our votes in a great democracy, and then that vote is held up to the sun, and it is looked through to see if there's any sort of POC energy around it.
Yeah, can't be having that. Oh no.
Yeah. Or perhaps there's a touch of the poor somewhere on the vote.
Never. Can't be having.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, if wealthy white suburbanites aren't deciding the election, is it really legitimate?
No. No. It's terrifying because then we're entering into the rule of the mob, and the mob does not know what it is good for it.
Yes, and that's why we need institutions and neoliberal democracy, because the experts know best.
Yeah. Look,
the institutions are sound.
The thing is that career politicians are the only people able to navigate the Baroque structure of our bureaucracy. And, you know, the system can't possibly become less complicated. It has to be this way because it makes us strong.
Oh, my God.
So we only count one out of every 10 votes.
We're just, you know, we're getting towards that more perfect union by slowly adding more fucking suburbanites from Long Island to the voting pool and nobody else.
Yes. Like, yes. There isn't, there, see, it, yeah, because they know how to live on boats and land. And so they cover all of the possibilities of combinations of existence in America.
Oh, true. Yeah, yeah. That reminds me of the boaters.
The beautiful boaters. The big, beautiful boaters.
And the boater armada. And that's the people who decide the elections.
Yes.
It's great.
I love them. They're very strong.
You just have to win by like a lot. So there was like some good like DSA primary wins, but like, you know, they had to win by like a significant amount to like.
Oh, dude, it was super impressive though. We've got like five people in assembly now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Did you see people comparing it to like what was it like in the early 70s when they elected five socialists to the assembly or to the council.
I hate all of the like this time in history is a little bit like that time in history because look, socialists existed in the same amount of number.
Well, it's just it's there's some parallels to the 70s New York, I will say, to now.
That yeah, yeah.
There's some good historical analysis that can be done there.
Like the aching need to cancel rent and the full-on decimation of our cityscape. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Also, the rise in crime.
Well, that's all coming. The rise in what's it called? Like the type of like desperation crime where people just have nothing because all the pandemic unemployment.
Oh, I'm not talking about that though. I'm talking about the cool gritty New York crime that you read. That's just like, wow, three people were shot at, and then the guy ran away. We're still looking for him, and we don't really know what he wanted. He didn't steal anything. He just wanted to go bang bang.
Doesn't that those always happen? I feel I can never tell if like there's actually an increase or if it's just like the like police press releases getting passed around more or something. Like I can never quite tell if it's like if it's actually increasing or not. It's hard to I think get a objective take on crime rates.
No, of course we don't have any access to the data, and it's so clear that at a time when we're like in opposition to the police force, they're going to also
increase
probably,
those types of stories. Like the one that's being tossed around by reactionaries is like a one-year-old was shot dead, and they're totally politicizing this one-year-old, like front cover of the Post, like every like constantly bringing it up on the media.
Yeah, this one-year-old was gonna be a worker, god damn it.
And it just feels like to me it's an excuse for the police to crack down on these neighborhoods more, and it's in their best interest to like trod these things out more. Because that's their answer. Their answer to the looming eviction crisis is put them all in jail, criminalize them.
That's going to be really funny. 47% of the state of New York is facing eviction, according to NBC.
Which is like, that's like already...
Yeah, so that's like a conservative estimate. Yeah. And, you know, if you're looking at least half of a state that is not going to be able to stay in their homes, like, I don't know where everybody thinks they're going to find space in the prisons, but we're going to have to cancel rent, guys.
And it's so insane. They did this rent cancellation, or not like quote unquote rent cancellation, like, program that expires like today. Like it was only open for like 2 weeks and you had to apply within those 2 weeks, and you have to be making less than you did before the COVID crisis, including the pandemic assistance. So it's only for people who, for some reason, aren't getting pandemic assistance, and are making less than they did before on COVID, and it expires right when the pandemic assistance expires. So there's going to be a whole new set of people who are going to be making way less than what they were making before COVID that will not get a chance to apply to this because of the limited window.
That rules.
Love it. The system is good and works.
Yeah, absolutely. It works because you have to jump through the hoop to prove that you can use money the right way when you get it.
Like the perfect hoop, like the classic like Kamala Harris bit of like, oh, you have to be of recent grad and of this type of district and this type of shit. Like,
oh yeah.
It was all like, that was like the questionnaire was like exactly that.
And then you get a Pell Grant.
Yeah. And then it just pays your landlord for you. It's not like, yeah, it's just, you jump through all these hoops and it's just to get your landlord paid.
Well, hey, my landlord is a really good person.
And landlords love accepting things that aren't like the typical, like easiest cash infusion possible. They love that. And they're not going to retaliate towards you for doing that at all. And they never ever retaliate towards Section 8 vouchers or any of that. That of course never happens. So no worries there.
Mm-hmm. My God, I will just not forget for a long time flyering for the rent strike in my neighborhood and then having this guy come and chase us down and yell, hey, you assholes, I thought we were in this together. Who's going to pay the landlords?
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, he was like one of those guys wearing like Adidas sandals, you know, and a little white tank top with like the gold chain and the hair sticking out.
Oh my God.
And he's like huffing after us and he's like pulling signs down behind as we put them up. He's like, hey, this isn't solidarity. You're leaving out the landowning class.
Jesus Christ. Fucking landlords.
I loved it.
The leech class. My God.
Leeches are an important part of the ecosystem. They clean the blood.
Yeah, comparing landlords to leeches is offensive to leeches for sure.
Oh.
I thought that's definitely on my mind because tomorrow there's a big march in Ridgewood, what my tenants union is organizing. If anyone hasn't heard about that yet, feel free to come out if you're the type to come out to these things. I understand being worried about COVID, and there's other ways to support too. People are making phone calls to, you know, and doing other things, doing flyering, doing cleanup, like.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot going on.
Apparently, if you ever just want to do a little service to your community, you can go outside and start cleaning the streets and getting rid of the garbage yourself because the city's out of money to pay people to do it.
Yeah, I have to find this post. So there's I saw this random post on the Department of Sanitation's Twitter where they were just like advertising yeah, we'll give you the tools if you want to get a volunteer group together to clean.
It's insane.
And it reminds me of this other, like, I always find these, like, just randomly looking at, like, the New York Twitter tab, which is, like, a nightmare zone, but funny to look at sometimes. The other one I found was a group of volunteers that the MTA posted about that were, like, they volunteered to hand out masks to people. And it was like this group of like old people, like,
oh God,
walking around like the subways all day, handing out masks for free.
Like, that's completely insane because they're supposed to be well stocked booths in every subway station to get a free mask. So the city it has advertisements everywhere saying that they've got you covered.
It's bullshit.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
When I took the subway to my doctor's appointment, I didn't see any of those signs. Like, I didn't see any of them. The only time I saw them was on the bus.
Oh, strange.
I mean, maybe there's more now, or like different sides of the platform, but it's like, obviously they should be, every part of the platform should have these signs on it.
Unless they don't have free masks anymore.
Unless they don't. Well, they don't. They also, it's not in their best interest to advertise this shit. The city's out of money and they refuse to just like spend anyway.
I wonder if this is going to turn into some kind of a cool program like, hey guys, clean up the city and then you get a piece of bread.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, oh, my really brutal prediction. I think I said it on this show, but I definitely tweeted it, that my really stupid, brutal prediction was that we will get a UBI, but it'll also be tied to a draft of some sort.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's yes, we've gone over that, because that's like the big Mayor Pete energy.
Totally. Oh, God. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, because he basically already was like, you know, in not so many words, or actually exactly as many words, like, service guarantees you citizenship. Thank you, Verhoeven.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, every day we get a little closer to Starship Troopers and nobody likes it.
Yeah, yeah, it's wild, because it's like we could structure this like a sort of like WPA type thing, but instead it's going to be some awful, yeah, it's going to be these awful things where like they're doing now, where they're just advertising like, look at these good volunteers. Like, literally, yeah, risking getting COVID because they're old, and they could die because they are old. They're all old. Like, whereas the mayor literally cut the youth summer employment program, you could have fucking had like younger people doing this riskier work and paid them and kept them, you know, out of trouble, whatever the fuck. Like as we talked about before, like, the best way to prevent crime is to like give people jobs and give people shit to do.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I don't fucking know. I don't know. The city, it's a bad place.
We're going into a crisis where, like, with this looming eviction crisis, there's a employment crisis, like, and the small amount of help that people are getting is expiring, like, now. And it's, like, going into...
So, for our international listeners, and all of our listeners who do not live in New York, apologies for slipping into talking about New York again. But if you wonder how it looks from the inside, it's just as bad as it seems.
It's honestly been kind of more pleasant lately. Like, at least the sirens are down. Like, the numbers of fatalities are down.
It's quite interesting. I believe that the city is a wonderful place to come and visit once again. You should all come in and see for yourselves. We've got wide open streets. We've got a lot of outdoor dining options.
The outdoor dining. It's okay. So I have something to say about that.
Oh no.
So I drove past Elmhurst and I went to Manhattan for my doctor's appointment. Elmhurst, at literally every restaurant has the outdoor dining and they're all packed. And because it's Elmhurst. And Elmhurst was one of the worst hit areas in the whole city. It's like right next to Corona Queens, which was like the worst hit, ironically. But insane. But Elmhurst Hospital was like the hospital that went like super viral on the New York Times for having, you know, tons of deaths. Elmhurst is a immigrant neighborhood, like, and so a lot of these restaurants employ tons of undocumented immigrants who have gotten zero help from the city, from the feds, from anybody, of course, and just the opposite, in fact. So they're all opening because that's what they have to do to survive. And it's so dangerous and it's so fucked because it's so crowded and you drive through it and you see it. And then meanwhile, in Manhattan, they're also trying to do the outdoor dining, at least where I was near Chelsea, like, but nobody was there. It was just empty. It was just like the waitresses just like waiting for anybody to show up.
Well, what times were you there?
So I was there at similar times both times.
Oh, weird.
But one might have been on a weekend and one not, which I would help, I assume, but maybe not. I mean, I was there during the week in Manhattan, which you'd think during the week in Manhattan would be busier.
I don't know. I mean, I don't, I'm not.
When I worked in Chelsea during that time, these places were always busy. They're definitely less busy than when I normally
know that a lot of people evacuated Manhattan.
Yeah, I mean, and that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is like it's like night and day, this like outdoor dining crap. So like people are doing it to survive, and I'm sure it'll be helpful for these places in Elmhurst to get some income, but it's also extremely, you know, dangerous and life-threatening. Meanwhile in Manhattan, they haven't canceled commercial rent at all. So all of these the small restaurants and small businesses we really like in Manhattan are all shuttering permanently. Because there's been no relief for them at all. And there's not this, you know, everyone evacuated Manhattan and like all of the like office buildings, like nobody's going to work in their office buildings. So,
so as I was saying, come on down to New York. We've got wide open streets. We've got great outdoor dining. One thing that you could see yourself doing, starting a brand new life here, because we've got ample opportunity to find you matched with a prime commercial luxury real estate deal that's absolutely perfect for you.
So insane.
We've got availability left and right. It's like the 90s out here, people, but just with higher rents. It's incredible.
Like much higher.
Sort of the same amount of guns, sort of the same amount of just dark things happening all around and a lot of uncertainty. But you know what? A new millennium is coming, and it's a millennium of... You're a small business opening in Manhattan. Would you like to sell gemstones? You could get a place that it's all set up to sell gemstones. There might even be gemstones still in there. You could just walk in and you sell them things as yourself and not as someone else.
We're reviving the Diamond District.
It's going to be great.
God. And we just go into the plot of Uncut Gems.
Hey, have you ever thought about yourself walking around in a city and getting all mad into a cell phone? Well, that could be you.
That could be you.
You can walk around in the middle of the street because it's easier to not to die that way.
it's so incredibly fucked, man. I have no idea. And then bringing it back to the antitrust hearings, right? Because like, you know, if like in New York, like it's helpful, like even if you don't live here, and I know it's fucking annoying to talk about New York all the time, but it sets a tone for other cities, like as other cities will set for New York sometimes, like New York might not have acted like if California didn't act on COVID first, you know? But with, I don't know, like the literally are like the all like commerce is happening like online right now. And we just have these four companies that are doing all of it. And like, we know that if these cities open up again, like they used to, there'll just be another huge spike and they'll close down again. So that's why it's like worth, I guess, trying to do some sort of like monopoly breakups, but like, yeah, I don't know. Lucia, do you know any about like the latest of what was any?
Well, basically
after the hearing,
basically what we're going to be dealing with in terms of seeing how this really monumental case is going to progress is like over the next 2 months, it's like August and September, they're going to be continuing to kind of collect and go over all of this information. And, you know, as stupid as all of the questions sound, because we're all, you know, digital natives or whatever, and all of these representatives are sort of like fumbling around to feel why it is wrong for so much online commerce to be monopolized by these companies, they're like, well, I mean, what's online commerce? How much of that is like our gross domestic product, you know, and like, where is all this stuff even coming from? And like, how regulated do we understand this to be? And, you know, it's like, we're seeing our like legislation scramble over the next 60 days to figure out if they want to also like take over this stuff. Like, will we see these platforms nationalized? Doubtful. Will we see them broken up? How could they be broken up? And it's like, at this point too, there's a lot of international kind of strife going on with the practices of data collection from our American moguls. You know, it's like Facebook collecting data on Europeans, right. And like, and you know, Google,
but they have laws, they have different laws than us.
They have, well, that's exactly why they're facing an issue there as well.
Right.
It's because it doesn't matter what the laws were. Facebook and Google and all of these platforms are still collecting data on people, and they're keeping it privately and, you know, buying and selling as they will. And it's like something that, you know, it's going to be interesting, because are we going to see the internet blocked in a way where Americans can't see European friends on like Instagram? Because it's owned by, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like for
they
all of the
know.
Art, for all of the art people, are we going to be like, oh, sorry, you can't see that Berlin gallery anymore, you know, or whatever. If you've got friends, you've got family, if you're separated by some coasts, is that going to be one of the cases? Are they going to somehow, are they going to get rid of the data that they were collecting? Are they going to turn that data over to the state? And then are they going to see that, you know, turned towards some other security measures? We don't know. But in the next 60 days, our, you know, it's like everything that we know about the way that we've been navigating could change radically. And I think it's also going to be interesting to look at in terms of like how the elections are run, because of the way that, you know, all of these platforms are kind of implicated in, you know, allowing certain messaging to proliferate across, you know, like allowing QAnon to be on Twitter. And it's like, is that allowed? No, now we're going to start purging people. Like, and who makes those decisions?
Yeah,
and like,
exactly. Yes. Like, that reminds me of the interview that I just did with Liz Pelly. That's probably not going to be published for a while, but it's about Spotify, because Liz Pelly writes a lot about Spotify. And basically the
Spotify
whole...
Spotify should be up on the chopping block too, damn it.
It should.
They're a monopoly of music, and that's the worst evil.
it's all, but it all works the same way. It's all really similar. Like, and because right now Spotify is getting into podcasts, which is why she reached out to us. Because we're not on Spotify, and
what?
And that's like, because like traditionally Spotify was only had curated podcasts. Now they're like allowing, like they're kind of turning into Apple, where you can submit your feed and get on the thing. But for a while, they were only prioritizing the aggregators that they work with. So it's weird, because it's, where is the line of like, where's the antitrust line? And that's what I think pisses me off with this. This is literally the antitrust committee. And like, they're the ones who we pay to try to think about all this stuff, try to think about like where the line between like these private networks like and trading data and like working within like different like their own internal apps and shit like that, where the line is. And like we have like reps that are like that don't understand the difference between like cookies, like storing cookies and storing yeah. data. Like it's yeah. wild. It's wild. I don't like
it is. I mean, you know, everyone is trying to do a lot of learning on the fly while also trying to save us from a monopoly, which is bizarre, because, you know, I'm wondering about, you know, how this case is taken in a sort of, you know, it's like on the left when we're looking at the way that capital functions and the way that business and, you know, competition is like sort of fostered and managed in our country and in like kind of the mandates and legislation that we uphold to run the very fabric of our society. It's like, all right, so the best that we can do is say that we as Americans are here to foster healthy competition. And that is all that our national level, like federal level of...
And they can't even do that.
Exactly. It's like, so it's, I don't know. To me, it's really like an interesting philosophical point of like, what should our lawmakers be crafting to help us to actually fight against the rampant exploitation that we're seeing? Because we don't at this point have anything that is like like nothing that would lead us to communism, you know, is built into the tools that we're using in combat.
Like, you mean in the United States, right?
Yeah. It's like, you know, so I think about it like in terms of the like a project on the left, it's like we don't have a road to traverse to get us to a place where we can have that transitional government.
Right.
We only have this government that is at its best and at its most opportune is like working to just sort of push back lightly against business sectors. Like, just sort of like, hey, we're not sure if you should do it like that. You should let other people also business.
And it's far too late. Like, that's like, I think also why I'm so impatient with these Congress people. Like, normally I'm nice to old people who don't get technology, but it's literally, it's their job, and it's been their job for a long time. And they had ample time to learn this shit. Like, it's their job to learn it. And like, and then they're all paid through special interest lobbying groups to not look into it more. Like, you know,
I mean, I kind of understand though, that there's also like a function of specialization going on where it seems
that
like
outpaces even like people who do kind of get it. I agree with that too.
Yeah, there's like, yeah, exactly. It's like there's something built into the way that all of these monopolies are modeled, which is like a clear obfuscation of the tools necessary to like even make the platforms. It's like, right. Oh, okay. And then what they're going to do is like go and subsidize programmers to then pipeline into their own Googleplex and then just like house everyone within their crazy compounds that like feed and house the workers that know how to actually like operate and make these things and just like keep them out of society as much as possible, like only talking to each other. And it's just like, okay, so then what can, you know, what can we do when everyone is so cloistered that like our legislation is, or you know, like our representatives are dealing with massive poverty, like issues with housing, issues with just like maintaining a workforce, trying to figure out like internal revenue. And then we're expecting them to understand also how to figure out, like, you know, it's like, they're not all coders. They just don't fucking know, because they've also been learning extremely baroque legal systems that are pertaining to all of these other like arenas that I get that they don't understand something that is intentionally like secretive.
Oh, totally. I mean, yeah, that's definitely part of it. That's definitely part of it. I don't know. I want to toss out of like my vision of a left and see if it's naive to you or something.
Oh, but no, I'll probably think it's beautiful.
I think my vision of the left is an international working class party that is explicitly in international solidarity and, you know, and in a party run by the working class. In this
vision, are there other parties?
I mean, it would be a party. It would be like you take like a skeletal structure, like the DSA, the IWW, something, and you infuse a bunch of money into getting it on the ballot as much as possible everywhere, like as an actual party and not just of subgroup of the Democratic Party, which I guess like has been tried and failed multiple times, but I still think it's necessary. And I think it was necessary back when looking back at stuff in the 70s, the only way that we got to the New Deal was through pressure from well-organized like communist and socialist parties and like clubs, like which we just do not have right now at all.
Well, yeah, dude. I mean, I'm into it. I think, I don't know. We've talked about having a workers' party. That's
no,
kind
I know.
Of all we advocate for is like, hey, it'd be cool if there was a workers' party.
Yeah, like, but I think what you're saying about like it, like the United States not having the ability to have, or the United States left not having an ability to have a transitional government. But maybe if we were in solidarity more with like our international comrades, maybe we could. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the part where I don't really understand what that means. But yeah, because, you know, we would have to like abolish nationhood somehow or change the ideas of our constitution to be like, actually, who cares? You know, you're French.
Right.
Why don't you run our politics? Like, or, no, the or whole if it thing was is in- like, we kind of got away from that to begin with.
Or if it was like we're partnered with these factories that are producing this stuff, and like, you know, I don't know. It just feels like we're in this really weird zone where like the like neoliberal globalization is like failing, but we still are going to like without this Kodak thing, are we just going to see like a bunch more examples of that Kodak thing? Like,
yeah,
just-
exactly. Well, I think that manufacturing in America needs to be revitalized, and we should have just been doing that to begin with. And like, it shouldn't be necessarily that we are relying on making chemicals like hydrochloroquoxy, whatever the fuck. It's just like, that's insane. Yeah. But I understand, like, we should be manufacturing things here. There's no reason why we shouldn't have been outsourcing to begin with. And like, I just don't think that I don't think that the answer to international trade is to have some kind of international, like, I don't know, government, because we already have so much complications within the, like, different working models that we've created in all of these different places. And we see the way that the fucking EU failed. And just,
yeah, it would when just you, end up like the EU. That's the
yeah,
problem.
Exactly. Like, when you scale things up like that, it inevitably exacerbates the kind of like wealth disparities that people come in with. So when you're working on trying to achieve some greater equality, it's like, dude, just keep working on it. I don't know. We're like, we're fucked, and we're like gonna have to let the thing fall apart.
It's gonna be so ugly.
But that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. And it's all right. But it's like kind of making we should have a workers' party, but I don't think I also don't think that the people who are complaining about the ineptitude of governance, like, I don't think that the answer is to make a more complicated government. I think we just need to actually, like, just get it straight. Our representatives should understand the playing field that we're operating on, and understand that, like, there is a way to legislate our way out of, like, tax havens being in some random island or whatever. Like,
but don't you think, like, a lot of them do understand that and just are paid to not?
Yeah, they're profiting off of it, which is why, yes, they need to, like, get out, and we need to hold criminals accountable. And, you know, if there are people profiting off of our immiseration, they should be held accountable. Like, they should be fucking...
Yeah, I just don't know how to hold all of these fuckers accountable without, like, this, like, a militant and international, like, group. Like, it doesn't have to be a political... It can be also a political party, but it could also just be an organization.
I just don't think that we need to wait for the entire world to get their shit together.
No.
Like, I think that people all over the place are realizing the necessity of collectivizing. So they're going to just be, like, doing their workers' party inside of their government. And they're going to be figuring things out where they're at. But we're not, like... Just, you know, for instance, like, trying to figure out how to build some kind of solidarity right now with China is, like, impossible because of the, you know, the, like, green wall that they have up with communications to begin with.
Right.
So it's like if you can't even easily communicate with workers in a certain place because they have a completely different system organized with their, like, policing and their, you know, it's like, what are you holding out for and what are you putting energy into? Of course, it would be lovely if everyone just was like, yeah, communism, if we just had it and it was working somehow, it would be great. And I totally agree. But in terms of, like, nuts and bolts of, like, figuring out how to get things together, we should probably, like, figure out how to strengthen our local politics.
Right, because it's like, the thing is, if we don't try to strengthen, like, our democracy and make it actually more democratic, then it, like, just leaves it to the totally unfettered, unchecked arena. Then literally nobody is going to.
Yeah. Yeah, the second that we open this up just to a world of, like, I don't know, endless possibilities of just being torn asunder on the international stage. It's like, no. I don't know. I believe we should be protecting ourselves right now because we're falling apart.
It's just wild. I don't know. I think I look to the international to help us because I don't know if we can help ourselves.
Yeah, right. The international helping us is just like, oh, yeah, we will pick you apart and use you for spare pieces. Like,
no, it's all the same corrupt ruling class orders. It's not like China is like this communist alternative. It's just another imperialist alternative.
Yeah, no, it is. But I'm saying it's even like at this point, yeah, it would be cool if everybody was friends, but everybody is not friends. That if you try to open up channels with some of these countries, I mean, you know, they're as open as they can be in terms of trade, and that's about it.
I don't even mean to talk on this biggest scale. I just mean even just like as leftists, like that sort of like cross communication of like, you know, people doing different work, like, you know, different unionization efforts or like theory or anything like that. Just like even just opening up those channels internationally, like, you know, kind of like we've been doing on our show, trying to reach out to international comrades and talk to them, and even just like learning and opening up these channels, I don't think is a bad way to spend your time.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you also just totally walked yourself back from the original idea. It's
like, well, the goal, well, yeah, the original
we're already just hanging and talking, and
it's the original. The original ideal is a goal for if we can get to that point. Like it's not like something that I'm like, what if we just had this right now? Because of course that doesn't make any sense.
No, of course. I just don't understand. Like, it's the thing of like, yeah, that would be cool if we had, I don't know, if everyone was like together and cool and on the same page. But what kind of circumstances around that would you need to facilitate this possibility? Which is why I ask, if you have an international workers' party, are there other parties in the model, in this ideal, in this vision, in this utopia? What else is there? Is there just one party where every worker in the whole world is all connected? I can easily see that turning into an authoritarian situation. You know what I mean? That's why I'm just like, okay, I don't know. There's a lot of there's a lot that needs to be fleshed out if you're going to talk about like the fantasy of where we could go, because I think a lot of the time people are really just saying, oh, wouldn't it be cool if things were cool? And it's like, yes, of course. I completely agree with that. But what are we saying? Like, are we saying, are there international parties for all? Is there an international conservative party? Is there an international fascist party? Is there only an international workers' party? Is there an international party of business owners?
Right. No, I wasn't even thinking that far ahead. I was literally just thinking of, like, within, like, I'm even, like, thinking back in time. I'm even thinking, like, in the 70s, there was like a more concrete, both socialist and communist parties that could get on the ballot, that were allowed to be on the ballot. And we don't even have like that ability anymore. Like, like anytime you try to have a third party challenged from the left, it gets absorbed into the Democratic Party. It's not even like, it's not even allowed to like function as its own party, really.
Well, here's speaking of absorption, is it all right to do a little theory corner?
Let's do it. Yes.
Okay. So I got a little, it's like about the same length of reading as the last time. But this is a little selection from Art and Bear Life by Josephine Barry. And we've been reading this in Constructing the Real. So, you know, you can kind of get a little idea about like where our heads have been at. This particular section is dealing with Andrea Fraser's work, and she, of course, is into institutional critique. So she's like constantly, all of her work is performing against, around, in the institution, yeah. And she'll do things like sell herself to a collector and edition the video and then see like what happens to that. And just, you know, she's edgy, she's feminist, she's wild, she's old school.
Yep.
Anyway, so now you know. Do-do-do-do-do. While the nature of self is shown to be oppressively overdetermined by neoliberalism's abolition of the boundaries between production and reproduction, economics and the arts, biological life and the market, and thus diminished in its scope of action, aesthetic self-presentation is also seen as an infinitely refractory movement of mediation and resignification within a process of inevitable commodification. This requires stringent regulation, one might say securitization, as its defensive response. While capitalist social relations ramify across all boundaries, demanding the highly geared performativity of its subjects, art is conceived of as claustrophobically fixed within its institutional parameters. To suggest that art can or should exist outside of the institution that defines it is not critique, says Fraser, but escapism. And later on in the book, Fraser is quoted again as explaining this deeper, where she says, like, well, we can't get out of the institution because we actually are the institution and we create it every time that we consider ourselves as producing something that is like art. And if the idea in your head pops up like, oh, that's art, it's like, well, you're in the institution. It's a part of you. Thus, as with Michael Hart and Antonio Negri's vision of global capitalism, in which all social production is understood to have been subsumed by it in an all-encompassing empire, there is no outside anymore, since the social divisions that give rise to art cannot be abolished through voluntarist performances or inactions, let alone through social transformation. Performativity has become the order of the day, a state both exposed and parodied in Fraser's work, yet also reinforced by her insistence that one can only impact structures by reflexively revealing them, never abolishing them for good.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I know that this is about art and everything, but kind of like applied to your model of trying to see a way out of the structures that we're dealing with politically. It's like, okay, well, the minute that we think of making a party that is interacting with this larger structure, how is it being affected by capital? How is it being affected by other parties? And are we trying to escape the system? Or like, because we're entering into it at that point, we should be thinking about ways that we can maybe, I don't know, like, it kind of goes back to that, like, reform or revolution, like, is it possible to destroy the thing and make the thing again? At this point, we're not sure, but right. It is definitely destroying itself.
It is destroying itself. I'm definitely, I don't want to be a, get absorbed. Don't want to get absorbed by the same system. It's, but at the same time, it's like, is there a way to like borrow some legitimacy to get enough people on board so that when it does collapse, there's some sort of organization to keep them afloat? I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, and it goes back to our thing of like, yeah, mutual aid is always going to be important. Trying to deal locally with our communities and actually affect change in an immediate sense, always going to be important, always going to be like completely necessary triage.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we don't, I guess what freaks me out is not knowing what the collapse is going to look like. or whatever. So far it's been like this like weird slow motion thing, where, like, you know, the deaths happen, people lose their homes happen, people lose their jobs happen. But it does feel like, you know, that August and September time is going to be really important. But I don't really know what, like, it's just so weird to even think about. maybe it won't. Maybe it will just find some way to keep it afloat for longer. But who knows?
Well, we do know that we can be looking forward to at least 300 new jobs at Kodak.
300. Oh my God. Yeah. And then like everyone else, like the entire city of Rochester is going to be able to sustain itself off of those 300 jobs.
Oh yeah. And there were like, I loved the second thing that was like, and subsequently there's also going to be 1200 other jobs.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. What does that look like?
Look, they're subsequent. They're outside of our jurisdiction.
They want it to go back to like the, oh man, we have to talk about this on another episode, but like right now it seems like the line getting pushed is like the gig economy is over. Now it's the hustle economy.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And everybody is even more individualized than you were in the gig economy.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah, because we don't even leave our houses anymore.
Yeah. So it's just I read this very infuriating article on this like website that was seemingly made up out of thin air just by like purchasing a 3-character Twitter handle and just like playing the algorithm right. And it was so fucking annoying. It had the most insipid garbage, like fake Michael DeForge illustrations throughout. And it interviewed like all these people who were like, yeah, I lost my job. And now I turn scrap fabric into masks and sell them on Etsy. And I now I'm hustling or whatever.
Works for me.
like it's just even deeper, like they just pray that like they can do this bare minimum, like 300 jobs, and then like 1,000 hustle cult, like a hustle individuals will emerge.
Oh God.
Around like a beehive buzzing around these 300 jobs or something.
That's horrifying. Hello, sir. Do you have a job? would you like to buy a wooden nickel? Fuck.
Yeah, because like you can't like, you know, make a diner outside the factory anymore because nobody can eat indoors right now. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Chris had this prediction actually about the outdoor dining thing that I thought was really horrifying and odd possible, but it was like, oh, we're going to continue to have outdoor dining in the winter. And I was like, no, stop it. Don't even, my brain kind of shuts down at these, like, kind of like talking about all this stuff. I just am like, I don't know. Cause right. I really don't. I'm like, the wall of possibility of like predicting anything for me
it's all possibilities. They aren't like, it's like, you can't get into like the future crystal ball type prediction. It's all just like, what if this happened?
No, of course. But it's just so hard for me to get there because I'm like, my mind is really, it's like if I had a pie chart of how much processing goes into like what I think of the future and what I think of every day, it's like 100% what am I doing today?
Yeah.
And then I look into the future and I'm like, it's not even there.
I'm totally there. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah. But it's okay. It's like I'm in the day and I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm doing all right. I had some food. I woke up in a bed. Like, this is good. I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying my life. Acting like, you know, this is the end. And I loved everything that happened.
Like, I'm fine if I die tomorrow because I had a great go at it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm enjoying every minute. I'm just like, yeah, wow. I love, wow. Like, I'm drinking water. I'm like, wow, this water is great. Like, I put on my shirt. I'm like, wow, you know, T-shirts are pretty cool, aren't they? Wow.
I'm like that with food, too. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make something really nice and just really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then because there's a little inkling somewhere
maybe.
That's like, huh, this could be it.
Like, maybe the supply chains will break down more again. Like there was a time during deep quarantine where you couldn't get certain things, and you can get some things right now, and I'm going to enjoy it right now.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And then thinking of predictions, it's like, oh man, outdoor dining in the winter, they're just going to get space heaters. Shoot. Fuck. Well, I guess that means people are going to keep their jobs.
Maybe, yeah, but also they are not sustaining enough business to make the rent. It's unless at all, like, it would be like, to me, unless like there's like major commercial rent relief. Otherwise, there just won't be restaurants. Like, they'll be like a bunch of food trucks or food carts.
Yes.
And stuff.
Oh yeah,
that's another possibility.
Oh, that would be nicer. At least.
I think that makes a little more sense, but it's still insane. All of it.
Yeah, it's like heating these areas. I don't know. I have seen it.
It's bizarre. I mean, they're all waiting for their leases to run out right now, I think. And I think a lot of these restaurants, when their leases do run out, they will just close and make a food cart instead.
Jesus.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then every single storefront and restaurant will just turn into a bank.
Yep.
Fuck.
All banks as far as, and just residential, they'll turn residential or I don't know.
Bank world. Bank world and Starbucks.
Yeah, even Starbucks isn't doing good. You see that?
Yeah.
God.
That's true. What is this? I can't even have a major coffee. The coffee man was about to be our president.
The coffee man is the only one who could take down the coffee man is the only one who could take down the coffee man.
Yes,
that
yes.
was the Conroe O'Malley bit.
Oh, it's true.
Oh man, yeah, fuck yeah. Get used to the four horsemen of the antitrust guys, because we're going to be seeing a lot more of them, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really looking forward to tuning into the next episodes.
the green one, I'm rooting for the green one.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for the blue guy.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Which one are you going to be for Halloween?
I'm going to be Jeff Bezos in drag. As Show Bezos.
Show Bezos. That's amazing.
Bring it full circle.
You're having a really good dream.
That's stupid.
I like it. I like it stupid. It's better that way.
Yeah, it could, that's like a real, that'd be a real like message from the future. Like in the future, Jeff Bezos is going to be on Drag Race. It's going to be a video conference. This is what it was in my dream. It was a video call. He called in. He called in and he had like a moment where you just see like his head and his shoulders. And he was like, you know, Rue, I just had to go all out for this. And then he like pans out into his full outfit.
Wow.
That was my dream.
Oh, wow. I just saw it. He was so regal. It's so futuristic.
And it's just such like a smarmy, like kind of like mask for mask gay energy, like doing drag for the first time, like sadist doing drag for the first time energy.
I honestly, when you said that it panned out, I thought of like Elon Musk on all fours, like a bench. And then Bezos was like kind of like leaning on the bench in his evening wear. You know, he is all like glamorous. He's just using Elon Musk as a human prop.
Oh, Elon, yeah. I can fix, God, I really do not like picturing Elon Musk with a ball gag, but it's out there
somewhere. Oh. Well, he had his whole Marquis de Sade phase.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and yeah, he's, oh man.
Repugnant?
Yeah, totally repugnant. I kind of released my zine about him. It never came out properly because of COVID stuff, but basically that all came true.
Oh, amazing.
I did it before COVID. Remember it? It was called Video Game Boss.
Yeah. Wait, do you have that in PDF?
Yeah, I have it in PDF.
Nice.
I'll post it in the Discord at least.
Oh, post it on the Patreon.
I'll post it on the Patreon. That's, yeah. Yes, I actually did mean to do that. I even like emailed the people who put it out like, hey, since like everything got torn to shit, I'm just going to put this out on my Patreon. And he was like, oh, totally.
Yeah, do it.
Okay, I'll do that.
What's up, everybody? Subscribe to the Patreon and then you're going to get to see.
You'll get my Elon Musk scene that I made before COVID and you're going to be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. It's going to be bugged out.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks, Lucia. Good up.
Yeah.
Have some fun, everyone.
Thanks, okay. Oh, yeah. Subscribe to Patreon. Yes. You can also get access to the Art and Labor Discord. And you can get access to Constructing the Real. You can just send us an email if you want to join and tell us what you would like to be a part of. And we'll send you links.
Yeah, you need to do both. You can do either, whatever you feel like.
Yeah, whatever you fancy.
All right. Take care.
I care if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't really matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you just drive a truck. I care if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care cause I just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Lots of fun.